Our next case this morning is number 063274 and 063738, John M. Against the Board of Education of Evanston Township High School District. Ms. Loken.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the Court, my name is Ann Wilson-Locken, and I am here representing the defendants' appellants, Evanston Township High School District 202, its Board of Education, and its current superintendent, Dr. Eric Witherspoon.
Your client, what is its relationship to the school district that included the middle school this young man was in? Is this a I'm vague as to whether did he change school districts or did is this high school a high school that children from Haven Middle School normally go to?
They are two separate legal entities. They have two separate boards of education and two separate taxing bases. The school district 65 is a kindergarten through 8th grade school district. The high school district is 9th through 12th grade. It is common for students to matriculate from Haven Middle School into the high school district, District 202. Mm-hmm. Not all of them do, of course. Some go on to different high school programs, but many of them live within the same community of Evanston and Skokie.
Are there other feeder schools?
Are there other feeder school districts into 202? I believe there might be, yes.
Is this the what determines whether someone graduating from Haven, is that the name of it, I believe?
Haven Middle School.
Middle School goes to this high school or to another? His residence?
His residence, exactly. And actually, all of the kids by residence graduating from Haven would matriculate into the high school district.
Live on this young man's block and you graduate from Haven and you're going to continue in a public high school, this is the one you go to.
Is that correct?
Okay.
That is correct.
So this is a normal graduation, in effect.
It is.
Into the next level of education.
That is correct.
Okay. So there are a lot of cases dealing with inter-district transfers, and one of the things we have to do is deal with the relevance of those cases.
Right. I understand, Your Honor. It looks like you're addressing, starting with our second issue in our appeal, which is the issue of stay put and how the matriculation from middle school into high school impacts that stay put placement. I'll backpedal a little bit just to sort of briefly explain the background or the facts. John M. is a...
I think we're pretty familiar
okay.
with the background of the facts. And you don't really dispute that he was receiving co-teaching services in the eighth grade, right?
Correct. The eighth grade had a co-teaching program.
But
correct.
The thrust of your argument, I just want to make sure I'm clear on it, is that you were not saying it was impossible to have this co-teaching situation at the high school level, but it was too burdensome.
That's correct.
In a nutshell.
Exactly. In a nutshell, the stay put provisions, as defined by this court, particularly in the Community High School District 218 case, recognize that there's a need for some flexibility with respect to stay put. As kids who are in a stay put placement for a prolonged period of time matriculate from grade to grade or class to class, things change. Their curriculum changes, their courses change, and the educational methodologies that are available change. In the 218 case, you had a student who was placed in a residential program and actually moved from not once but twice into a total of three different residential programs during the course of their stay put placement. This circuit recognized that there were very different offerings. Those were three different programs completely, and that there were different, I think the language they used, but there was qualitative differences in those programs. But because of the student's needs and matriculation and age and so forth, those differences are acceptable under stay put. Stay put is defined as the then current educational placement, and the comments to the federal regulations have defined that to mean the setting within which the services are offered. In this case, the setting hasn't changed. The placement hasn't changed. Just like
federal regulations cited in your brief.
They are, as are the comments. The placement hasn't changed. The setting hasn't changed. In eighth grade, John was in regular education classes for English, math, science, social studies, band, physical education, and had one special education period. That placement has continued through the high school. The difference or the crux of the issue in this case regarding stay put is this issue of co-teaching. And that's not his placement. That's not the setting. That's the educational methodology that the elementary school district decided to adopt, and the high school district has chosen not to. And under this circuit's decision in the Lockman case, the high school district has the ability, has the authority to make those decisions regarding educational methodology. And even if you were to assume that methodology is covered by stay put, which we don't believe that it is, even if you were to make that leap, this circuit's decision in KCK still gives reason or opportunity to modify an injunction in a stay put injunction if there's an unreasonable burden or a compelling reason to do so. In this case, you're asking the high school district to completely adopt an educational methodology and to change its programming in a way that it has chosen not to do. And so, therefore, I think that clearly falls within the KCK unreasonable burden or compelling interest exception, even if you assume that methodology is somehow covered by stay put. There was a second issue that was raised by my appeal, and it deals with the court's sua sponte judgment on the merits of the case. In its August 18, 2006 decision, the district court entered a decision on the merits of the case, basically reversing and vacating the hearing officer's decision and ordering the school district and parents to create a new IEP. This was done without notice or an opportunity for either side to present their case on the merits.
Let me ask you this. Did you file a motion to reconsider? Because I didn't pull the entire docket below.
I did not. I filed sort of an interesting procedural. I filed a motion to stay the decision. Mm-hmm. On September 28th, the court granted that motion to stay with respect to the limited issue of its decision on the merits, basically conceding that it overstepped its bounds and entered judgment that was not requested by either party and was not fully briefed. In that same decision, that's the decision where the court modified its original stay-put injunction to require co-teaching. The original order with respect to stay-put entered in August didn't make reference to co-teaching at all. It required the school district to merely provide the same minutes of service that the student had been receiving at the elementary school district in eighth grade. The school district understood or interpreted that to mean it had flexibility, as it should, to determine methodology. It filed a motion to stay just the portion of the order regarding the merits, but the court again went beyond what was in front of it and modified the original stay-put injunction to now require co-teaching.
And then after that, there was no motion to reconsider. And I guess in these, the motion to stay, you went into the fact that the court went beyond what the request of the parties was, and there had been no opportunity to really...
On the motion to stay, yes, that's exactly why. That was the rationale or the reason why I gave the court to stay the decision. It's one of the elements that you look at when looking to stay, likelihood of success on the merits. And I explained to the court or showed the court why I believed the sua sponte decision was likely to be reversed on appeal, namely because of the plethora of case law in this circuit that disfavors sua sponte judgments. And in this case, very clearly, neither of the procedural motions that were before the judge when it entered its decision on the merits requested relief on the merits.
And then so after this stay was filed, it actually got worse for you because then it was the requirement of a co-teacher.
It sure did. It sure did.
What is the present? As you outline in your reply brief, that there's been a new special ed teacher hired, and the person that was working with John is now working with him full time, one-on-one.
Sure, in compliance with the order, the co-teaching order, which was not stated.
Is that your definition or somebody's definition of co-teaching?
It is our attempt to comply with the letter of the order, absolutely, that we have we hired a new special education teacher at an annual salary of approximately $55,000 a year. That teacher was then able to relieve John's current resource teacher, special education teacher, of all of her duties so that she could be with John in three of his regular education classes as a co-teacher. Of course, co-teaching means a lot more than just plopping a teacher into the the classroom, and that really gets to the burden of this entire thing. Co-teaching is an entire methodology. There's actually several ways that you can implement co-teaching. It requires training, collaboration, an understanding of the core curriculum by the special ed and the regular education teacher, training of your regular education staff. It is an entire methodology that the school district has not chosen to adopt. And quite frankly, given the temporary nature of stay put, it seems silly, quite frankly, to require a school district to change its entire operational, to hire staff, to train staff, when stay put is just it's a temporary injunction. It's a limited remedy until there's a final decision on the merits.
Well, the trouble with all this, you can't put it in reverse and go back to where you were. Where you are now going forward with it is, if this is reversed, what are you going to do? Fire the person?
I mean, obviously the teacher is under a contract, but there are certainly other ways that the school district would choose to utilize that special education teacher if co-teaching is not mandated by this court.
Is there currently something going on now with the district court going forward with whatever you're trying to resolve? Because this is sort of interlocutory. What's going on down in the court?
Yeah,
now?
Well, it's right now the parties have exchanged discovery. The last status in front of the district court, he seemed to think that he was sort of did not need to continue to be involved until there was a decision from this court.
For us, huh?
Yes, that's sort of what the impression I got. Nevertheless, I went ahead and served discovery and then recently received discovery requests from the parent's attorney as well.
Are John's parents complaining about the current operation, what's going on? Are they satisfied with what's going on now?
I think that they're pleased that there is a co-teacher, a special education teacher in those three classes. They are, however, not satisfied with just about anything that the school district is doing currently. Okay. I mean, I think it's fair to say that.
Okay.
I certainly don't want to speak for them. They are in the courtroom, but it seems that they are pervasively dissatisfied with the school district. I think most of my points have been hit, so if you don't have any further questions, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, and I thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Mr. Stone.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, and Mr. and Mrs. M. I'm Charles Stone. I represent the parents in this case, and John, who is now a sophomore at the high school. When this case began, he was a freshman. I'd like to begin with what the court did and what the court didn't do. The parents filed three motions in front of the district court, a motion to enforce the stay-put placement, a motion for leave to file additional evidence, which consisted partly of evidence that the hearing officer had excluded, and then finally a motion to compel the school district to allow an educational expert of the parents to go in and observe John's classes. Included with these three motions were 45 exhibits, including testimony from the special ed director of the high school and the special ed teacher of the high school. And in the two rulings that we're here about today, the court did three things: reversed the hearing officer on a very limited point, but reversed the hearing officer. Second, enforced the stay-put placement, which was simply a matter of looking at the program that had been provided previously, pursuant to the KCK case and pursuant to the statute. And third, tried to reset the IEP process by saying that the parties will now go forward, meet, confer, and try to develop an individualized IEP. And if there was any remaining issues to be resolved at the end of that, there would be a briefing and the court would, looking at the record and at the briefs, resolve the matter.
Well, didn't the district court itself acknowledge that vacating the hearing decision went beyond what the parents had even requested?
Yes.
So my question is, on what ground could we affirm the vacatur of that hearing decision if the parties didn't have the chance to argue the merits of the case before the district court?
Your Honor, on the grounds that it was harmless error, under the unique circumstances of this case. The testimony of the special education director and the special education teacher about the IEP and about the high school program would demonstrate under any summary judgment standard, not just the one applied to IDEA cases, that there is no genuine issue of material fact, only questions of law with regard to whether the IEP was sufficient in support of services for John.
Yeah, but when you look at this Casey K case, it doesn't have to be identical services that are provided. And I think you overread that Casey K case because the court in rendering that decision said there had to be some flexibility, and in fact said it's something of an exact science, that it's a fact-driven approach, and you know it doesn't necessarily have to be identical.
Well, Your Honor, we're moving then to the stay put and not to the what I'm saying that there is no genuine issue of material fact about. The Casey K case says, I believe it says, and I can actually quote from it, it's not as if the break between 8th and 9th grade is so much sharper than any other grade break as to make temporary continuation of the previous educational placement inappropriate. So while it is an inexact science, if you look at what the school district actually provided to John, it's plain that it did not comply with the law, which is you provide the program, and it's not just the setting. It is not just the setting. It's the program and services as well. And in John's case, this child with Down syndrome in a regular classroom needs a great deal of support. So the supportive services are enormously important to him. And what had been provided and what the school district had in front of it was an IEP that said 600 minutes per week of service in the regular classroom in three classes. And that's going to be provided by the special education teacher, and they knew that that what had been the previous program.
Well, wasn't the district court required to give some consideration to the hearing officer's finding that the school district had complied with the stay put provision?
Your Honor, no, I don't believe so, and here's why.
So the court could just grant it without even considering the hearing officer's findings, which were pretty extensive.
Your Honor, the findings with regard to stay put were not extensive, and the findings were dicta. And if I can explain, the reason they were dicta is, pursuant to the IDEA, there is a formal pre-hearing conference to decide what the issues in the case will be. And this took place over a few different dates. And at that pre-hearing conference, there was a question as to whether there would be an issue regarding the stay put placement. I raised that question, and the school district's answer was no, they would implement the eighth grade IEP. There was no statement, however, we're not going to provide the 600 minutes per week of service. There was nothing. And in fact, there was one issue about a behavior plan that they did raise at that pre-hearing conference, as they were required to do to determine if there was an issue about it. The parents agreed to what the school district proposed with regard to the behavior plan, and that was written into the order. But as far as any change in the then current educational placement, which is, and the Casey K case says this, an automatic statutory injunction, and one that is punishable by contempt. The Casey K case said that it's like the stay in bankruptcy court. And at that point, the school district had in front of it an IEP that said 600 minutes per week of service in the regular classroom, and said, we will perform that IEP. And then here's what they provided, giving them the greatest benefit of the doubt, 215 minutes per week of consultative service, which, by the way, was not written into the IEP. But that is different both in degree and in kind from the service that had been provided. And the case law is very clear that if a school district, they're first of all required to seek relief from this automatic statutory injunction, and that is what the Casey K case says. They have to seek relief, which they did not do. Instead, they stipulated that they would provide this program. So what they provided was one-third of the time commitment from a special ed teacher, and it was different in intensity in that under the eighth grade program, the teacher would be right in the classroom and would be working with John and with other students, but seeing what John was having difficulty with, differentiating the instruction, changing it, as only a special education teacher is trained to do right there at the time. So this is a different question, Your Honors, from the question of the merits of the case. This is about the educational status quo that existed prior. And there's no question that that was 600 minutes per week of service by the special education teacher in the regular classroom. They're not disputing it. So instead of making that an issue at the hearing so that the hearing officer, who is supposed to be the educational expert, as the court was alluding to, can make a determination as to impossibility or burdensomeness, they evaded review by simply saying, we'll do it, and then not doing it. I believe that this amounts to affirmative misconduct within the, and I, the district court found that they had waived the right to seek relief in the case by not bringing it up to the hearing officer. And the KCK case says, as counsel alluded to, that you can seek relief, but they didn't do it. And at this point, all the witnesses have testified. I can't go back and redo the hearing. And it was an intentional relinquishment of a known right, and that the right being the right to seek relief from the automatic statutory injunction. In addition, it's an estoppel situation. They sought to evade review by the hearing officer again by, and to answer your question, Judge, I'm sorry you just remembered it. The hearing officer made some statements about it, the stay put. However, it was not one of the issues at the hearing. It was therefore not necessary to make those statements. It was therefore dicta. And I think certainly the district court is allowed to perceive it as dicta and to give it the weight that it's due. And we did not have a chance to present any case about the lack of burdensomeness or questioning of witnesses as to, for example, how it would benefit other children so that the burden should be shared. It's not just one child that's requiring this, but it's a benefit to entire classrooms. We couldn't bring in witnesses, for example, from the State Board of Ed, which I would have brought in regarding a compliance review in which the State Board of Ed found them to be in non-compliance with the least restrictive environment mandate and ordered them to consider co-teaching.
Now, was that kind of evidence presented to the district court?
That was presented in my motion to present additional evidence because the hearing officer had excluded it.
Right. So did the district court hear testimony or were there affidavits in that additional motion?
Was no, Your Honor.
Response by the school district on that? Because that certainly went to the issue of burdensomeness, didn't it?
Yes,
compliance.
Yes.
I mean, the additional documents that you provided.
I believe so. I believe the state board, there's an inference that the state board would not order something that's either impossible or unduly burdensome, or at least order them to consider that. And in fact, it is a teaching method that's used widely in high schools in order to ensure accessibility to the regular classroom by children with disabilities. And there are probably not several different ways to do this for a child with multiple disabilities. There's a question of bringing the expertise of the regular education teacher and the special education teacher together. And you can do that, it seems like, either through co-teaching so that the teacher is present in the classroom, or you can do it through extensive consultation, which was not done here by the school district.
What is currently in place? Is it, would you call it a stay put? Is the stay put in place now?
Yes, sir. The judge's preliminary injunction to enforce the stay put is in place.
And as I asked the other side, what is the is this a satisfactory stay put situation, or is it satisfactory what they're doing now, or is it still not adequate?
Judge, it's satisfactory in kind, and this is a beginning teacher that they have assigned to John. He hasn't taught before. I think she's getting her feet wet at the same time. The facts that were cited in the reply brief are not in the record. There's not much I can do with them, but I don't see how being required to provide 3 periods per day of co-teaching services amounts to having to dedicate one teacher entirely to one child. And that was the order, 3 classes per day of co-teaching services, because that's what the program had been. And to say something about the sua sponte decision, the court did not say that he had been wrong. He said that he had been premature. I concede that he had been premature. However, if you look at the facts of the case, they admit that the IEP that they drafted did not contain any sort of classroom or consultation support for this child. There was simply nothing in there. And then at the hearing, they said, well, we're going to provide this consultative service. And the Knabel case and the other cases I've cited state that in judging.
Suppose the high school were to say, okay, we do owe this young man some in-classroom services. We can't provide the co-teacher services that he had in the middle school, because that just simply doesn't work well in the format we use in our high school for delivering education generally. But we can do something else in the classroom. Do they, in your view, have that flexibility?
Under the law, of course. They have to provide some program that will provide adequate support. They provided nothing, sir. And that is why this due process was filed. They did not write anything into the IEP, nor did they tell the parents of anything they were going to provide, except for this separate resource classroom. So that's true that co-teaching is not the only method. However, they're supposed to, during the IEP, exercise judgment and come up with a program, what
so
they're
the
offering.
Real, so the real problem you have is that there's nothing delivered in the classroom. Am I right?
In the IEP. That's correct.
That's correct. Now, am I correct that the Department of Education, Federal Department of Education, is the department charged with the administration of the statute? Is that correct?
Yes.
In their regulations, do they speak explicitly to the problem of a child progressing, as this young man did, from one whole level of education to the next level of education, and what kind of adaptations can be made to a to an educational plan because of that natural progression?
They're more in accord with the KCK case. There is nothing explicit saying when you go from eighth grade to high school that some different rule applies. No, the stay put provision applies. That's what applies.
I found your brief and your opponent's brief really don't cite to cases that deal with this explicit problem of a child progressing like this. Have there been many cases throughout the
country? The KCK case is one example of that.
Outside of Casey, yeah. But outside of Casey, are there other cases?
I don't believe that explicitly is found to be any distinguishing factor. Moving from one district to another as a natural progression, a matriculation, the same rules apply.
I'm beginning to wonder if we ought to have the Department of Education enter this case and tell us. And tell us how the law to be administered here.
I believe they have, sir, and they
They're
say
not a party in the case, are they right now?
No, they are not.
Talking about their becoming a party, putting this whole thing on hold and having the department enter the case.
The State Board of Education,
the Federal Bureau, the Federal Department of Education. You told me they're charged with the administration of this statute.
Yes, sir.
It seems like there's a huge gap in their regulatory system.
Your Honor, I can't speak for them, but I would say that there is no gap, that they have provided the regulations, and the same ones that apply to a sixth grader apply to a high school student.
They are asking us to make a good deal of law here that's going to be followed not only in this circuit but other places. I'm beginning to wonder if we've got the whole story here as to what the law requires.
Your Honor, the law requires the stay put placement. and there is no limitation on that.
I think that's sufficient guidance.
I'm not a lawmaker. I believe that is what the law provides currently. Yes, sir. And at the hearing, the special education director stated that the consultative services that were not written into the IEP were necessary for the child, and we believe that the absence of them demonstrates that the IEP is insufficient. And as a matter of law, the Knabel case says that you cannot and should not consider things outside of the IEP in determining the sufficiency of it, and there is no evidence that the school made an offer of any kind, orally or informally, to the parents. And therefore, we are not asking for anything other than to affirm the court in that respect. We're not saying that the merits of the question of co-teaching should be determined in this appeal. We're just saying let's direct our attention forward, and that IEP was not individualized and was not sufficient for John, admittedly by their admission. I would like to correct a couple of things, if I could, in the time remaining. In the school district's brief about the law, they stated at one point that the word co-teaching is not present in the federal regulations or in the state regulations as being a part of the continuum of alternative placements, which I contend they violated, and I believe the district court also contended they violated, although he didn't use that phrase. And in both of the state law and the federal law, the continuum of alternative placements in federal regulation 34 CFR 300.551 or the current version 300.115 talk about the school district must make provision for supplementary services such as itinerant instruction. So it's using a general category, itinerant instruction. Certainly, itinerant instruction includes the co-teacher. That's what I looked up, itinerant journeying, traveling from place to place or on a circuit as a preacher, judge, or peddler. And that's what a co-teacher does as well, travels to the classroom, provides service in the classroom. So, again, they're using general categories, certainly the co-teacher applies. And in addition, the school district argued that consultative services, again, are not explicitly written out. Consultative services must be provided in the IEP. However, the hearing officer in his decision said that this 215 minutes of service must be written into the IEP, and that was at pages 27 to 28, 827, 828. Of his decision, and he cited the IDEA section that I was citing previously. The special ed teacher also agreed at the hearing on page 1529 of volume 5 of the record that this was a supplementary aid of, or service. Needs to be written down. Thank you. I used up my time.
Thank you, Mr. Stone.
Thank you.
How much time does Ms. Locken have?
8 minutes.
Perhaps you could help me out then.
I would love to try.
What is your client's position with respect to helping this young man in the classroom? Is it your view that nothing can be done for him in the classroom?
Absolutely not. And actually, that was the number one point I wanted to...
And be done in the classroom for this young man. You say you can't have a co-teacher situation. I'm not sure, as I read your brief, I'm not sure you really articulated why that won't work. Why won't that work? And if that won't work, what can you do for him?
Let me start, if you don't mind, I'll start by telling you what we can and were doing for John. The school district has a resource and consultation model. In the case of John, he was receiving extreme amounts of consultation. That means that his special education resource teacher worked one-on-one with him in a small special ed environment to provide additional help with respect to his mainstream classes, his regular education classes.
Right. In the mainstream class, right?
In a special ed class. Then in addition to that, it was actually a male teacher his freshman year. In addition to that, the teacher visited John on site at least two periods a day. There was testimony that in the regular education environment. In fact, if you...
In the regular classes?
In the regular classes, yes. In the regular classes, two periods per day, the testimony at the hearing, as reflected actually in the second district court order, indicates that the special education teacher spent 86 minutes per week in the regular education classes to observe John and to see what was going on so that he could provide assistance.
And how many classes were those?
It was two periods per week, but it was different. He testified it was different classes. It wasn't always the same class that he was going into.
And that class, it was two periods. How often did the class meet?
His core classes meet 5 days a week, his core curriculum classes.
So those were 10 classes, then 86 minutes over.
The 86 minutes per week meant he was going in two periods per week. Mm-hmm. So he may go in and see one math class on Monday and English on Wednesday.
Because
and,
the classes are how many minutes?
The classes are 43 minutes apiece.
Now that's substantially different than being a co-teacher in those classes, am I correct?
It is somewhat different, yeah. It's a different educational methodology. I can't say that he's a co-teacher.
Somewhat different or substantially different?
Well, in terms of the support that John was receiving, I don't think there was a difference. In addition to those two periods of observation, he was receiving 215 minutes of consultation services where the special education teacher was working with the regular education teachers to modify his curriculum, to modify his tests, to modify his assignments, to assist John in having those tests administered in a quiet environment so he could have more time and be distraction-free. So the actual effect on John, it's two different methodologies, but the actual effect on John is actually, from the school district's perspective, not any different. The co-teaching doesn't provide anything better. It's just different. In fact, if you look at the educational literature, and I did talk about that a little bit in one of my briefs, I think my reply brief, there's no study that indicates that co-teaching, particularly at the high school level, is better than the resource consultation model that the school district has used. And in fact, several educational articles have called for sort of caution using the co-teaching model at that level.
And what's the caution of the
Well,
there's the heart of it? Is it that I mean, how does the teacher and John communicate while they're in a regular class?
Right. The time can't be used as effectively, quite frankly. And actually, if you listen to the testimony of the co-teacher in eighth grade, she testified that she was in there helping a lot of different kids. That 600 minutes wasn't dedicated to John. He was just placed in a class for a total of 600 minutes per week that had a co-teacher present. It was by no means that 600 minutes per week of direct service to John. She testified that she had other students, special education students, on her caseload that were in those classes that she was helping. She testified that she helped regular ed kids sometimes. If anyone needed help, she was in there in the class as a teacher. So it is a different methodology, but it doesn't provide a quantitative or qualitative difference. And in fact, if you look at the hearing officer's decision, he picked up on that right away. He indicated that the testimony from the eighth grade indicates that there really wasn't any better benefit to the co-teaching classes that he received in eighth grade to the ones that he did not receive in eighth grade. Because if you recall from eighth grade, he wasn't receiving co-teaching in every class, only in English, language arts, reading, and math. But for science, social studies, band, physical education, and so forth, there was no co-teacher present. The science and social study teachers testified that he did fine, just the same as the English reading and math teachers. So there wasn't really a difference. It's a different method. It is not better or worse.
And then did you, this argument that you're making before us, was that made to the district court?
No, we never got into the merits of co-teaching.
Yeah,
no, absolutely not.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Right. But I just wondered, like, for example, in that motion to stay or after that second order that the district court entered, you know, but you said there was no motion to reconsider.
Well,
none
yeah.
of those arguments were before.
No, and my motion
at
to
any point.
You're correct. My motion to stay was focused on staying the decision on the merits. I didn't expect an order on co-teaching to come out of that. There were several other things that were mentioned, clarifications that I'd like to hit on. Getting to the merits, my opposing counsel indicated that the harmless error doctrine should apply. I think it's a decision on the merits against the school district is certainly error. It opens up liability for attorney's fees, and it it without doubt is detrimental and to the school district. So to suggest that it somehow doesn't matter that there's a decision on the merits out there, I think is totally false. In addition, he also suggested on the merits that because we don't offer co-teaching, we automatically violate IDEA, so we don't really need to get any further in terms of the merits. But co-teaching is not required. It's not required under IDEA. It's only the only argument they could have to support co-teaching is if there's evidence that John requires it in order to receive a free, appropriate public education. That type of analysis was never done by the district court, and when it was done by the hearing officer, he found that John doesn't require co-teaching to benefit from his educational program. Regarding stay put, there was some discussion about an Illinois State Board of Education report that was not admitted at the hearing level and was discussed by the attorney, by my opposing attorney, as requiring co-teaching or requiring the school district to consider co-teaching. I will say, first of all, that Illinois State Board of Education report dated back to like 2002 or 2003, maybe even earlier, years before John was a student at the high school, which is exactly why the hearing officer felt that it wasn't relevant to the case and properly did not admit that into evidence. Moreover, it doesn't require the high school district to look at co-teaching. It indicates that the school district should explore different methods for including students and then kind of lists off, for example, EG, and then kind of has a little list. Co-teaching is one of those things, but it's not by any stretch a mandate that the district look or adopt co-teaching. I'd like to take a minute to distinguish KCK, because there was quite a bit of discussion about KCK. In that case is fundamentally different. The issue in that case was moving the child from the district wanted to move. Oh, I see my time is up.
That's right. Mr. Stone had a bit more time when the light went on. You can have a
okay. Thank you very much. Quickly, KCK dealt with a situation where a student was matriculating from 8th to 9th grade, and the 8th grade had him placed in a private therapeutic day school, and the high school district wanted to move him back into a public school setting. Very different setting, very different placement. There was no argument of burden. There was no requirement that the high school district change its methodology. It just didn't want to pay the tuition for the private school. So it's a very different case here, where you actually have a high school district that's going to need to rework or revamp its educational environment.
I think we are all familiar with KCK,
okay.
So I think we'll have to say that's the end of
okay,
the time.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to both counsel in the case for a very enlightening oral argument. We very much appreciate your efforts. The case will be taken under advisement.